Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. I got both my co-hosts with me today from Dallas, Texas, Skylar Teo.
What up, what up, what up?
And from Los Angeles, Aaron Alvarado.
Hey, David, what's going on, buddy?
Dude, we got two movies to talk about. We've got one on Netflix and one in theaters. And I can't wait to talk about both of them for very different reasons. Before we get to movies, though, we need to give our friend Aaron some credit here. His team, the Los Angeles Lakers of Anaheim, defeated the Mavs on Friday night and the Kings on Saturday night, which is...
To be honest, we stomped the Mavs. Like, it wasn't even close from the very beginning. Yeah. Started the game on, I believe, a 15-3 run, and then we never looked back. I will say the Kings gave us a little bit of a scare for two quarters.
We were leading the whole game.
until the third quarter when
partway through the third
KCP quarter. Took over.
Yeah, I told you early on. I texted you early on. I felt like this is the Kentavious game.
Yeah, you were right. You were very right on that. But yeah, he went off in the third. Like, he controlled that game. I think we scored 37 points in the third quarter, and yeah, we pulled that one out.
So. Skylar's getting tired. Sorry. Let's talk about Skylar's team. Skylar, why is Dennis Smith Jr. a cheater?
He's a cheater because he didn't want to do work and not get paid. Do work, get paid. That's my life. I get it.
Okay. All right.
Dennis and me on the same team.
So what's his excuse for not showing up to the game on Friday?
His excuse is he talked with Mark Cuban, and Cube said, "Hey, Dennis, you want an extra $47,000? And he's like, always? And he said, "Tank, baby, tank." So
Dennis, we already have a Trailblazers fan, by the way, coming in. James Allen Cotner. Thanks for listening.
Excellent. Yeah, so Dennis Smith Jr., I'll tell you this. Mark Cuban has been talking with Shia LaBeouf about coming in and captaining the tank for us because he's got a lot of experience with tank driving. And so, dude, this tank, we're going nowhere but up, by which I mean down. We are at the top of the league as far as number of losses. We're only right there with, I think Phoenix has one more than us. Mm. And I'm not sure Phoenix is ever going to lose again. After last night, because they had a chance. Portland had to win at the last second.
Now, Portland.
Do you count that Sports Illustrated article as a loss?
That's the biggest L we'll carry all year, yeah, for sure. Cubes, man. I can't believe... The more that's come out about it, Cuban made some mistakes, but like the real mistake was... We had this like neoconservative guy running the HR department for 15 years, and he allowed this gross human being who lasted at a company ran by like a huge Trump supporter for 3 months before he was run out.
That was an amazing little side note on the story there. The guy goes from harassing every woman on the map in the front office of the Mavs to a new company. Where he lasts for 3 whole months after a fateful elevator ride that he took. Right. Amazing.
So that leads me to believe is how alt-right is the Mavs organization?
Well, so here's the thing. There's two Mavs organizations, you know, two every team. You have the front office where, like, they make player decisions.
Yes.
All that going on. And then there's the back foundation. Office, which is just, like, it's the people you talk to when you're getting season tickets. It's all your friends at the Kings. It's these guys who are making all their money off commission. And they work for the Mavs, so they feel really proud about it. But at the same time, they don't know the players. Maybe the players will come wave at them and they'll feel really good about themselves. But like they still have like that locker room mentality because they probably all played like Division III basketball. And so they're hyper masculine and definitely voted for Trump. And so those people all suck. And I think the thing is, they all suck on every single team's like... And every franchise has this problem because they all have these stupid guys that are working in their back offices or whatever. And I think that's why Cuban's not going to get that punished because this is happening everywhere and all the owners know this. And so if they bring the hammer down and they take away our top pick and DeAndre Ayton from us, Cuban will go postal on the NBA. And There will be no one
left. I agree. Cuban would go postal. I mean,
the bus family will go
he's
down.
He's going to go. I think we lost Skyler there for a second. But
no, he's back.
Okay, there he is.
I'm back.
No, I totally agree. And I think that's why, like, Donald Sterling's crimes were so. I mean,
Donald. It's pronounced Donald.
Oh, stop Donald it. Sterling.
Stop it. Pronounced Donald isn't the Don.
They were so egregious and so blatant that, you know, the rest of these owners were able to at least hide their racism. Donald couldn't. And so and I'm talking about Donald Sterling, not the president, who is not a racist.
Look, there's bad guys on both sides. I mean, so, he said it himself.
Yeah, exactly. Bad guys on both sides.
I mean, there are bad guys on both sides. He's right. Now, he said that there's good people on both sides. He's wrong there. But there's definitely bad liberals.
There's definitely bad guys on both sides. Speaking of bad guys, I got a story. I got an NBA-related story that happened a couple days ago. Not the Laker game, but the night, two nights before, the Oklahoma City Thunder were in Sacramento. And my dad and I go pretty early to the game, about 90 minutes early, right when the doors open. I was trying to go in and get this limited edition Bogdan Bogdanovic jersey that I knew they were going to sell out of. Anyway, so we're there early. And we sit in our season tickets, which are nosebleed seats, to be sure. They are up in the second, about midway up the second level. And no one's even there yet. I'm excited because this thing flashes on the Jumbotron saying that I can get a hot dog and a soda for $4. I even sent you guys a photo of it. I was so excited. In the process... What's that?
I can confirm. I got that text.
You got the text. You read the text. Good.
Yeah.
I sent a lot of texts.
Didn't see a hot dog nor a soda, though.
Oh,
dude,
yeah.
That soda cup was
well,
small.
This is what happens. So I go in. I get the hot dog and get the soda. I sit down. My dad and I are just thrilled. Just thrilled that we just spent $4 to be able to get a hot dog and a soda. Because, I mean, you guys know what it's like in arenas. Otherwise, it would have been $17, right? And I'm sitting there, and then this woman approaches us, an employee of the Kings, who's like a season ticket account manager, who comes up and says, "Hey, are you a father and a son?" And I'm like, hesitantly, I go, "Yes." And she says, "I am responsible for the season ticket holder of this gentleman who sits just right behind the broadcaster booth, you know, a very wealthy individual who couldn't make the game today, and he wanted me to give the tickets away to someone else. He specifically said, find a father and a son to give my tickets to so they can sit real close." And for, so I'm immediately thinking, like, no mothers or daughters were allowed in this equation.
That's sexist, man.
Yeah, but no doubt about it. And I thought, this isn't good. And then I thought, oh, now's not a good time to get on my high horse because I'm taking these tickets.
And did she say they had to be a white father and white son?
Yeah. He specifically
just understood.
He said no people of color, just a white father and son combo.
Dude, I think the Kings organization. Did she say anything about how Vlade treats her?
Yeah. She said that Vlade is classy AF.
I heard he puts cigarettes places. Little Bill Clinton-ish.
Vladdy's on a constant smoke break. Vladdy's time as GM, he is on a constant smoke break. That's all he's doing. Anyway, so she gives us these seats. Now, I'm excited, not just because they are close to the court, but because they are club access seats, which means we get to go into the what's called club rush, which is down on the floor level behind the essentially like the locker rooms. It is unlimited free food, free drinks, open bar. Of course, I don't drink, so I'm getting all sorts of mocktails. Unlimited sodas.
You ordered mocktails?
Yes, of course. I don't drink alcohol. So,
I know, but
halftime.
I would just get a Coke.
Well, yeah, I got both. Make no mistake. I got everything. Okay. It wasn't a this or that. It was give me everything.
Did you and your dad return the $4 hot dog and sodas?
Well, that's the thing is she says this to me. When she says that they're club access, I look at the hot dog. By the way, it wasn't a hot dog. It was more like a Vienna sausage. This thing was like, this thing was about that big. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, and I got this little tiny cup, little soda and a little hot dog. And I look at it and I'm like, nope, no way. Like, I'm not wasting 1 ounce of stomach space on this because I'm about to go get free food at Club Rush. So, like, I drop it all, and I go into Club Rush, and I am just feasting. They've got this grill out, and these guys are doing the Mongolian grill thing, and I'm getting fried rice. I'm grabbing teriyaki chicken. At halftime, they fill it up with a bunch of desserts, tapioca pudding, and this like the strawberry shortcake and cheesecakes. Anyway, it was like, it was one of those moments where you sit and you think like, oh man, this is how rich people live all the time. Like, this is what life is like all the time.
When you were eating that stuff, did you have like the Willy Wonka Pure Imagination song going through your head?
Yeah.
You were humming
pure
it?
Pure imagination. Yeah. Yeah, and going through the tunnel was a lot like going through the tunnel in Willy Wonka.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, it was terrifying.
Very psychedelic.
Not like the tunnel in Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, I'm not even at the real part of the story yet. I'm only at the part where I'm fraternizing with really wealthy people. But we get to our seats, and this is for the first time in my life that I am in clear earshot of players, okay? Now, you guys know there are some members of the Oklahoma City Thunder that I do not like. One of them is Russell Westbrook, okay? A man who was undeserving of the MVP award that he was inexplicably given for leading his team to a very quick first round playoff exit. But I didn't heckle him. I heckled someone who I actually dislike more. A man by the name of Carmelo Anthony. Who is one of my least favorite NBA players, is just not fun at all to watch, is not a great personality or presence, certainly thinks he is. But I said something to him. I honestly didn't think he would hear or react, but he did. And I got in trouble. I got this conduct advisory warning from the NBA. This is real. So backing up a little bit. He goes to check in the game after he'd been pulled out early in the first quarter because he's terrible at basketball. And he's sitting at the scorer's table, and I said, "Carmelo, New York never loved you." And he turned – I said it mostly to make the people next to me laugh, which, success, mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished.
Loved it, by the way. Sacramento fans eating that up. And he's sitting with his back to me, and he turns his head a little bit, not all the way around to look at me, but in a way to acknowledge, like, I heard what you said. And within 30 seconds, the dude hits a three, turns towards the scorers, or turns to the broadcasting table right behind it where I am, and he walks by like this. And then he keeps going. So those of you listening on the audio pod, he holds up three sideways across his eyes as he walks very clearly at me. It was in my, it was the direction that he heard it. It was definitely towards me. And it was a surreal moment because I'm sitting there thinking, did I just get in Carmelo's head? Did I just get in his head?
You were Spike Lee and he was Reggie Miller.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Am I going to be on the front page of the New York Post where I'm blamed?
There's going to be a 30 for 30 on you, I think. That's what that means.
Carmelo Anthony versus the Sacramento Kings.
I mean, it's just called the three is what it is.
So I'm pretty hyped, right? I'm pretty excited because at this point it's like, I can't believe he actually reacted. He listened. And it wasn't like I yelled a profanity or some sort of, I mean, heaven forbid, a racial slur, which I would never do.
And that only happens in hockey, which literally did happen in Chicago.
That's awful.
Deplorable.
That's awful. Yeah. But, like, I made a joke. I said, New York never loved you. Apparently, I hurt his feelings. So, at halftime, a gentleman in a suit hands me this card. That is an NBA conduct advisory, which I will read to you right now over the pod. It says, during NBA games in all NBA arenas, every fan is required to comply with the NBA's fan code of conduct. Just sidebar here. Have you guys read the NBA fan code of conduct, either of you?
No. Didn't know there was one.
And you both have attended games in person.
Wait, yeah. Have I read of this? Yeah, it was sitting on my seat when I arrived and sat front
row.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. So they'll have them sitting on the front row, like baseline. So right. He hands this to me. This, but have you read the code of conduct is my question.
Yeah.
You
I had
read
to read it?
It
that day when I was on the front row. Yeah, they gave me the piece of paper.
Before you could sit down.
Wait, they gave you the actual full code of conduct?
Yeah. Because, for the Mavs, if you're sitting courtside, they make you... make sure you know what you can and can't do.
Wow. Okay.
To make you recite it like the Pledge of Allegiance.
Which pretty much the big thing for the Mavericks specifically says don't say anything to JJ Barea at all. Doesn't matter if you know him. Doesn't matter if it's in Spanish or English or whatever. Like, just don't talk to JJ Barea. That's in bold. That's italicized. It's in Comic Sans. You can't miss it.
I hope that'd be great if that were in the entire NBA. Like, everyone's fan code of conduct has like a specific, like, you know, little like appendices for JJ Brea. It's like, don't do it.
Well, if you want to get in Brea's head, just wear a FEMA jacket.
Oh, no. No. Boo.
Okay.
Boo.
So continuing on. This says, this is particularly important for fans like you with seats in close proximity to the playing court. Fans who act inappropriately will not be tolerated and may be subject to ejection from the arena and or revocation of their tickets. Revocation of their tickets?
Yeah, revocation. Yep.
We encourage you to enjoy the game and to cheer for our players and teams in a respectful way. NBA League security. I'm assuming the gentleman that gave this to me worked for the NBA League security. So, guys, I almost got ejected from a game.
I just had an idea.
Yeah.
What if they revoke the season ticket holder seats that didn't belong to you?
Yeah.
It belonged to somebody else.
The guy who hates women.
So that's what I'm saying. So that's what I'm getting at is I thought, like, there's this man I'm very grateful for these seats, but he's clearly a misogynist. And I'm imagining him in some 5-star hotel on his business trip, but, you know, the reason why he couldn't be in the seats himself, watching the game on television, seeing in his seats, which are, by the way, seats that are in view of almost every angle of basketball. You can see the people sitting in those seats. If he saw me getting escorted out of there, mission accomplished. it was my way of saying thanks for the tickets, but no thanks.
That would have been a very Larry David moment. I mean, there literally almost was an episode like that.
Like
Trip Shaq.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's my NBA story. Probably my proudest NBA moment in arena. Probably.
That's very good.
Pretty excited about it. Other than being able to walk the game ball down in our season, our home opener this year against the Houston Rockets.
Also sent us a photo with you and one of your childhood idols from the Sacramento Kings.
I sure did. Now, this was the next night. The night after I almost got ejected was the season ticket holder party. And I got to meet Doug Christie. And I got a photo with him. And we did a little pound. And I made sure that I did a pound with a fist. That same fist that connected with Rick Fox when they got in their famous fight in 2003. Which was a terrific connection. I mean, he just hit him right in the jaw. Just, you know, knocked him in there pretty good.
It was one of the better NBA punches, I have to admit.
It really was. He connects right in there. And it's not, you know, it was not a homie. Both of them really went at it, you know, with intent, which you don't see in this. I mean, fights aren't real anymore. I mean, you can swing like, what's his name? Gosh, who was that player that
no swung, one knows his name.
Swung really hard but missed him. Anyway.
I know you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Moving on, though.
Yeah. He's a nobody.
Yeah, well, kind of.
But for the Nuggets.
Anyway, I got to meet Doug Christie. I also caught a basketball from Bogdan Bogdanovic and one from Iman Shumpert, or Iman Shumper, as I like to call him. it was a heck of a basketball week, even though we lost at the buzzer to Russell Westbrook and lost in the fourth quarter to the Los Angeles Lakers. I still got to meet Doug Christie, who is Sacramento royalty. I was going to say loyalty.
Does he still live in Sac?
Yeah, he does. He lives in Sacramento. Okay.
Why?
Did you get to meet his wife, by the way?
No, Jackie was not there. No.
Oh, too bad.
I can't believe she allows him.
He lives in Sacramento. Vlade's always had a place in Sacramento. So has Peja. So has Brad Miller.
Yeah, but Vlade's not spending more than a few days a year in Sacramento.
Maybe. The rest in Serbia,
possibly. He's always in Serbia. Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like he's active.
Bobby Jackson? Military. Bobby Jackson still lives here. I've seen him around town several times.
Bobby Jackson? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't understand that. Like Sacramento, people joke about Sacramento as not having a great nightlife, but it's great when you're like settling down with your family for these guys in retirement. You know, like you're in California. It's like, I think it makes a lot of sense post NBA. That's why so many former Kings players still live in Sacramento. Chris Webber still has his house here too, but of course Chris Webber's never here. Anyway,
he probably doesn't know he still has a house there.
No, I don't think he does. I don't think
he's
he
like, where are all my black socks?
Chris Webber can't even pronounce the names of the players currently on the team. Like he handed Bogdan Bogdanovic the MVP trophy for the Rising All-Stars game and just absolutely annihilated the name. I mean, speaking of annihilation.
No, we're not doing annihilation first.
No, we're not.
We're going to do mute first.
So those of you listening, if you're listening to this, if you have a Facebook account, you also have a Netflix account. That's how it works.
Okay, so all three of us, before we do the mute, let's hit the mute button on your microphone so we do the review on mute.
Okay, all right, I'm hitting mute. Okay. Okay, all right, the jig is up. The jig is up. Okay. Oh, we lost Aaron. Oh, no.
Aaron decided to mute himself.
He literally removed himself. It's just mute, man.
Aaron said he's lost David.
So I'm excited to talk about this movie. I'm thrilled to talk about it. This is a new Netflix film. This was just released on Friday. This is directed by Duncan Jones, friend of the pod. Duncan,
ex-friend of the pod.
Skylar, do you want to talk about Duncan? Do you want to give us a little background?
So Duncan Jones is a man who definitely doesn't have a famous dad that helped him get to where he is today, who he made this whole movie for, I guess, which is really a spitting on his dead dad's grave.
I
don't know.
I saw at the end of the film, I saw it was dedicated to David Jones.
Well, that's true. I've never heard. I think he's got a locker or something. Davy Jones's locker.
Yeah.
So he made a movie called Moon, like a decade ago, with Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey. Not good.
Easy to replace that voice.
Yeah, they should go and replace that thing instantly. And it's a sci-fi classic. It's a really hyper low budget, great looking sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
And people were like, "Oh, he's amazing," and then he went and made a movie with my boy Jake Gyllenhaal called Source Code, which was a like mid-level, probably like $30 million budget movie that is great. It's a fun story. It's quick. Everyone loved it. Got like a 90 on Rotten Tomatoes. People adored it. And then did fairly well in Rotten Tomatoes. And then all of a sudden the studios were like, hey, here's a $200 million movie. Go make the Warcraft movie. A movie everyone's like, yes, we need this movie. And so he went and made it.
China definitely responded that way.
Yeah, he wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is his first writing experience, and it was terrible. Critics hated it. I think everyone hated it except like the people that Duncan Jones retweets.
Republic of China.
It did very well in China. It's true. I think they're making a sequel.
It made a ton of money.
It did make a ton of money despite being terrible. But I never saw Duncan it. Loved it, and so he was proud of his work.
He was,
and he made sure everybody retweeted it. And so from there, he got Netflix to give him $40 million to make his quote-unquote passion project.
Yes.
And it's so bad.
So Mute, it's worth noting, this is a script he's been working on for years, if not over a decade. Before Moon, this has been his passion project. I've heard him reference it since I heard him talking about Source Code, and I was really paying attention to him. This has been his thing. Now, he's not been able to get it greenlit by any studios until here we have Netflix flush with cash looking for any director, especially one that's got two solid critically acclaimed films and one a commercially successful film. I should say two commercially successful, two, you get what I'm saying. Why not? Why not give him the budget he needs or just enough of a budget to make it look like a really good made-for-TV cable movie? Which is part of what I want to talk about, and make his passion project Mute. We all three have very similar opinions on this film, and I want Aaron to go in on this. I'm just going to lead off with one take, hot take here. Duncan Jones, as we mentioned, has a famous father, a man by the name of David Bowie, a musical icon, one of my favorite musicians of all time. Huge David Bowie fan. Growing up, Duncan, as a child, was exposed to the life of having a parent that was an enormous celebrity. Duncan was known as Zoe Bowie. The things that Zoe Bowie probably experienced are going to make you probably a little bit skewed in terms of your perception as an adult. There's no way to be able to grow up in that environment and be totally level-headed. With that being said, Duncan Jones has seemed pretty well-adjusted in every interview I've seen him in, and his filmmaking has been good. He actually has talent. Mute is a movie I would expect to be directed by Zoe Bowie. That's the movie that Zoe Bowie makes, not Duncan Jones. Aaron, what did you think?
Mute is, bar none, the worst movie I've seen in 2018. Possibly the worst movie I've seen in all of the 2000s.
Yeah,
It is atrocious from start to finish. There is zero redeeming factor of this movie. The writing is unexplainably bad. It's the dialogue is so cheesy, so ham-fisted. The acting is bad. Paul Rudd is bad. How do you make Paul Rudd bad? I love Paul Rudd.
By trying to make Paul Rudd a really bad guy.
Man, he is really, really bad in this. Justin Theroux, a big fan of Justin Theroux, he is terrible.
Oh, come on, baby.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is the movie that is just an absolute pain to watch. It is so long. It feels like it's never going to end. Everything about it just sucks. It's just flat out. It's the worst Netflix movie I've ever seen. That's saying something because they just released Bright and the other Cloverfield sequel. Yeah. So it's terribly
wasn't that bad.
No, yeah.
Compared to this, it was an Oscar winner.
No, Bright is remarkably better than this.
Yeah, this movie is just, it's really, really bad. I mean, if you like bad movies, then I would say try to sit through Mute because it's really funny in some sense. But it's funny because it's so bad. It fails so immensely.
I think even there, as a bad movie, it's tough because it's so boring.
It's so boring.
It's so boring, and it's so poorly made, and there feels like there wasn't any craft put into it for a passion project, like, which is crazy. Like, this is this guy, he's been trying to make it for a decade, which it's shocking that he didn't get the message from, like, 20 studios not wanting to make this movie, because it's terrible.
Yeah.
And
there's so many problems with it.
Like, yeah, the way it treats the LGBT community is terrible. The way it treats Justin Theroux as an actor is terrible. The way, first off, there's a really weird connection here between this and the movie Zoolander, which Justin Theroux helped write and is in. He has a small role. And then Alexander Skarsgård is in. And David Bowie is in. David Bowie, a.k.a. the father of Duncan Jones. Is this some sort of like way of Duncan Jones is mad about Zoolander, so he's taking it out on Justin Theroux and Alexander Skarsgård by trying to ruin their careers? Like,
I don't know.
It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Yeah, it doesn't make sense that a guy, so many talented pieces are in this movie, and they all fail. Every single one of them falls flat on its face. And it's pretty remarkable in that sense because it's not like it's an untalented cast. There's some good pieces there.
Yeah.
Just none of them work at all.
Yeah, even Dom Monaghan is in there.
Yeah, he is.
Monaghan.
His character's.
Dom Monaghan. Put respect on his
whatever,
name.
Whatever. I don't know how to say
don't,
the last
whatever,
name.
Whatever, Dominic Monaghan.
I thought his name was Pip. Is that right?
Yeah, Mary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he's Mary.
So Billy Boyd played Pip.
Billy Boyd.
Put respect on both of their names. Greatest hobbits in film history. Gosh, I can't believe you guys are disrespecting the two best hobbits ever. How if we knock out a Dom Monaghan, Billy Boyd, buddy cop movie?
Because
like
Billy Boyd won't act. He's just a front man for his band.
Dom Monaghan's in a band.
He is in a band? Well, in Lost he is.
he's in a band in real life, bro. Check out his band.
The Lost Support Band.
The what were they called? I forgot.
The Lost
I remember
Boys.
The song, something about something for you.
It was a pretty generically written rock song.
Because you know who wrote it? J.J. Abrams wrote it.
or even worse, Damon Lindelof. Bottom line here is Mute is boring AF. It was a struggle to finish it for me, which I finished it this morning just for the sake of this pod.
It's a multi-day watch.
There's a scene where he's jumped off fell off a bridge and he's in the water and he's looking up and I'm sitting there just like, why was this movie made? What is this movie about? What's even like the moral? Not that everything needs to have like some clean cut moral of the story, but like, what am I taking away from this film? Like, what did I just experience?
What's the theme?
What's the theme of the film? Like, it was only when someone was like, I want a neo noir, and I want it to be in the world of like Blade Runner, and I wanted a
neo noir.
What?
Neon noir.
It really was neon noir.
That's the tagline.
You're exactly neon noir. Right.
Why is it in the future?
It's like he watched. It was like Blade Runner 2049. Like he saw the concepts that were being prepared. He's like, I want the poorest man's version of Blade Runner 2049. Like, I want the poorest man's version of this.
It's just like when you have a character, you know, you want to create something about them that's like their USP, their unique selling point, you know. There's something unique about them. So the first thing is he's Amish in like this world. He's like living in Berlin and he's Amish. That's interesting. There's a story there. But no. He's also mute. Yeah. And it's also the future. It's like, no. Duncan. Let's pick one of those three. Like, choose one. Pick one. Is it the future, or is he mute, or is he Amish? Like, you can't have all three, bro. You're going to make a terrible movie.
He did all three.
Well, spoiler, he doesn't end the movie silent. Or doesn't end the movie mute. He gets his voice.
It's dangerous. Back up.
He gets like a Darth Vader. He gets a robotic part, guys, robotic best. Part real. By the way, Why did Justin Theroux put that in him?
Why did
he direct
it? I'm sorry.
I'm telling you, this movie's funny.
It's nonsense.
I guess he did it because he wanted an apology, but oh my gosh.
We're joking about this movie, but there's also like the most stomach-churning moment in a film I've seen ever. Not as a compliment either, but the moment when he like makes sure that dying Paul Rudd can see the screen. That made me so sick.
Because there's like, look. I think not all material should be off base for a film, but there's obviously some themes and some things that aren't, I'm not going to be able to like enjoy as much because they're part of the movie, right? And I'm not going to – I don't want to go all into it here. But Duncan or Zoe, whoever, crosses a line here just enough to where I'm like, why? I mean, I'm asking why through a lot of this film, but like why are you going this far in? Like, I'm almost feeling like you're a sympathizer to this character and what he's doing. Like, I don't know. To me, it wasn't clear that guy was doing anything wrong in Duncan's eyes. And that is troubling.
So. Well, I mean, look at how the main character treated him. Yeah. Not the main character, but Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd, sure.
Main antagonist.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, by the way, Paul Rudd was the main character.
Exactly. I mean,
that's the problem is there's no main character.
That is a huge problem. Do you guys know what the Rotten Tomatoes score of this movie is?
Luba is my main character.
It's up to like a 12, right?
10% on Rotten Tomatoes.
No.
Huge. Awesome.
Yeah. That's 40 reviews.
That's about twice as much as it should be.
It's 10 points too high.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can't believe that. I mean, I can believe now why so many studios passed up on this. I can't believe how bad this movie was, though.
It shouldn't have been made.
There's so much that could have been hinted at that they didn't need to show us. Like, they should not have showed us the actual, like, him being a pedo. Like, it's so, ugh.
Yeah. Well,
Duncan really wanted to, like, push the envelope, make, like, a subversive movie, and he just goes over the top with it. Like, there's no subtlety there.
Nah.
There's zero subtlety.
No subtlety, no message, no theme,
hey,
no
babe.
Plot.
Itty bitty titty committee,
babe.
Come
on, baby. Come on, baby.
Embarrassing. I'm telling you, this is the most embarrassing dialogue in a movie I've seen.
It's really, really
babe.
Bad. It's
really How old are you, babe? So, oh, you're 21? Can you pretend you're 16, babe?
Let's go. Okay. All right.
That's Justin Theroux. That's one of America's greatest
Well, not anymore actors. To me. Not anymore to me.
Or Jennifer Aniston. Dude, she saw the performance.
That's the thing.
She's like, I'm out of 3,000.
That's why Jennifer Aniston divorced him. She read the script. She's like, you didn't agree to this. And he's like, I did. He's like, sweetheart, this is David Bowie's son.
Well, she had to get out of there before the movie was released. Yeah, and I hate to say it, but Duncan's dad had to get out of there before the movie was released as well.
Yeah, the Netflix deal was signed, and he's like, I'm out of here.
He's like, all right. Yeah, exactly.
I know where this is going.
Turning off the chemo treatments.
Nowhere good.
Go. So let's end on this. Let's end on this point. If David Bowie were alive, would he be honest with his son about the quality of this work?
No.
You don't think so?
He would fly to space before he had to tell him the truth. He'd be like, son.
Well, in some eyes,
movie you made. It was trippy.
All right. Well, let's transition here to a movie that we feel markedly different about. And that is in theaters. Oh, and Skylar.
See you, bud.
Skylar will be joining us back shortly.
He's hanging out with David Bowie right now.
I think so. Yeah, I think he went up to space. Bye-bye, Captain Tom.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think that David Bowie would care because, I mean, if he said anything, Duncan could just reference like half of David Bowie's studio albums.
Yeah.
Because half of them are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, they're experimental and they're really, really bad.
Yeah, so. They really are bad. But if you get the best of Bowie stuff.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, he's got like 30 great songs.
Yeah.
Easily. So, and then 300 bad ones.
Yeah. Well, that's like a lot of artists like that that just keep making, keep making, keep making. I'm like okay with that, I think, to an extent. Like, keep making. Do whatever you want. When you've already provided the world with absolute gold, solid gold, right. like a lot right. of incredible content like David Bowie has, he's you know, he's welcome to make 300 mediocre to bad albums. Okay. Moving on. Mute is on Netflix.
Don't watch it.
Does not have our recommendation.
No.
Do not waste your time. It is over 2 hours long.
Go watch Bright again.
Watch Bright again. Now, in theaters, we have Alex Garland's Annihilation, starring Natalie Portman, Tessa Thompson, sprinkle in a little bit of Oscar Isaac in there. And this is from...
Bit of Oscar Isaac.
Actually, more than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah.
Writer-director of Ex Machina, speaking of Oscar Isaac, as well as Donald Gleason. And and Skyler was the first one to strike first in watching this. And Skyler, you texted us immediately and said, you guys, I have a new favorite film of 2018. Tell us why.
Absolutely. I mean, this and Mute... I mean, it's hard to pick one. No, I mean, this is... The moment I walked out of here, I actually texted you. I said, Aaron, you're going to love this. This is going to be top three for you for the year. Yeah. Yeah. So, David, I'm not sure how you're going to feel about it. Probably going to be a little mixed. And I think I nailed it on the head. It's an awesome, experiential, sci-fi, biological, thought-provoking movie that's like something where you watch it, and then you're just thinking about it, and you want to watch it again. And, like, I'm excited to watch this movie again, because it's really interesting. Now, I've come into this a little differently than the two of you, because I read the book recently. And so Annihilation is based off a book that Alex Garland took and made a screenplay out of. Now, it's very loosely based off the book, because there's almost everything's different except the main character, the fact that there is an Area X and the Shimmer, and then there's a lighthouse. Like, everything else is different. In fact, there's a lot of things that happen in the book that are just, like, a way cooler way of doing things, and I'm not sure why. I'm not even sure they were, like, Alex Garland ideas, but, like, the characters don't have names. They're just, like, their positions. It's the psychologist. It's the biologist. And, like, that kind of thing kind of, in a cool way, dehumanizes them. And, like, by, like, the second chapter of the book, there's only two people alive, or three people alive. Like, it's just really cool how quickly things move, and a book is a really cool way to get into this world, but a movie has to do things differently, and it definitely does. And this movie is incredible, like visually and like audio based wise. Like, the score is so chilling, because like in a movie, you know, you can like kind of, or in a book, excuse me, with a book, you can start to feel the characters go insane because like there's a lot of things the author can do. In a movie, it's hard because you're not getting into the characters' minds. And so the way the movie unnerves you and takes you out of your comfort zone is by having this score that's just, like, insane. And the score does make you feel crazy. Like, and by the time you get to the big moment, you are feeling, like, just so uneasy. And it's incredible. I love it. I love the journey the movie takes you on. And it's quick, despite the fact that, like... It takes its time, it crawls along, but oh, it's so good. Like, I'm excited to see this movie again.
The payoff it's incredible. It's very rare that we get so much buildup in a movie, and then the payoff is better than the buildup. This is one of those movies. It builds and it builds and it builds, and the payoff is just, I mean, it's mind-blowing. This is one of those mind-blowing movies that you have to experience in the theater, because it's just... It's so unique, and I would suggest anyone go out to the movie theater, watch this, because you're going to have a great time. Yeah, like you said, there's so many elements that just work perfectly in this thing. It's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen, by the way.
Yes.
There's a couple scenes that, I mean, I was in my seat, like on the edge of my seat, literally, because it's so tense, and it's horrifying. So, yeah.
So
great experience.
Really good. I like what you said there, Aaron, about it being the scary. I was going to mention that in some of my first feedback in our text thread, was that I don't think I've been that scared in a film as long as I can remember. And it's been a while since I've felt that terrified. And part of it was it wasn't like just these jump scares. It wasn't these screeching violins. It's not a horror film. But that this is a film that's a slow burn. It's very atmospheric, but it's not afraid to go from 0 to 100 in like a split second. Like, I mean, one moment you're just sitting there just like being like, hey, what's going on? You're trying to figure things out with them. And all of a sudden, boom, something happens that you really don't see, you know, you don't see coming. And in some ways, violently so. And you're just like, whoa. And it kind of really kind of shakes what you're thinking of the situation and what's going on. And then adds this immediacy of like, oh, they've got to figure this out because things are going very badly, very quickly. But then it's able to go right back down to zero and it goes back to the slow burn.
So for anyone that hasn't seen the trailer, did you want to explain what the premise is?
Yeah, Skylar, you're the most adept at the material.
Okay, you've lived in that world.
I've lived in that world.
You've been in the shimmer. I live, you've been back.
Geographically, I live closest to where Area X is.
That's true.
So there's this area down in the bayou that...
Lighthouse.
There's a lighthouse that was struck by some sort of meteor-type event. And ever since then, there's a area that's been growing and growing, and the military and the government's been sending in crews to try and figure out what's going on, and nobody ever comes out in the movie. The book, it's different, but no one's ever returned until finally our heroine, Natalie Portman's husband, Kane, finally comes out, but he doesn't remember anything. He's been gone for a year. He's not really himself. And so that leads to a series of events that leads with her going into the actual area, the Shimmer, and to try and figure things out for herself. And it's a movie that's like, we just talked about Mute, and these kind of movies are kind of nice mirrors of each other, or opposites really, because Mute is aimless and doesn't have a message and doesn't know what it is and doesn't try to be anything really. Whereas this movie knows exactly what it is. It's extremely confident in what it is, and it has a message that I thought was like incredibly clear about the human condition and about why, like, I think the message is about like self-destruction and the fact that all organic matter as we know it is self-destructive because for some reason we decay. And like, so there's that organic level of decay, and then it goes out from there. Like, socially we decay, we like destroy ourselves, and it's all these people who are going into this situation where it's a suicide mission for all intents and purposes, but they all have reasons why like they're self-destructing and doing this. And then you see more self-destruction inside, or you see characters dealing with that differently. Like Tessa Thompson's mm-hmm. character takes a very different approach to it. And like,
should we go full spoilers here? Should we give a post spoiler warning?
I don't think you can talk about this movie for more than 5 minutes without going full spoilers.
Well, and I don't think we have to go a whole lot longer, but those listening that want to see this that don't want to be spoiled or are very sensitive to spoilers, I frankly think that this film is still good even if you've been spoiled. But like, if you are sensitive to spoilers, you want to bounce out now. So if you're on the Facebook live feed right now or on the audio pod, leave now. But this has our full our recommendation.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
Brave little recommended.
This is a brave little recommended.
The first movie of the year second movie of the year. Black Panther is number one. But this is probably a movie that I like better than Black Panther. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. But we should probably get to that at some point because Skylar hated Black Panther. I think you said, quote, it was too much.
Well, we know why.
I said I liked it better the first time I saw it when it was called The KKK. No, I like Black Panther. Don't be haters. Michael B. Jordan's my man. Speaking of Michael B. Jordan, his girlfriend from...
Tessa Thompson.
From Creed, so, Tessa Thompson, was incredible.
Spoiler alert.
Nice tie-in.
Yes, get the spoilers. So, I mean, you guys were talking about how this is like a scary movie. It's not horror genre. It's totally sci-fi. It's not even like Alien, where like there's jump scares. Like there's like a few things. But like, I think the true horrors, there's a bear that like... has a snout and can scream with the soul of a woman, which is freaking terrifying. But absolutely. I think the stuff that's way scarier is just the very instability and like the lack of trust you can put into your own mind. And like, that is terrifying. Like,
now,
the
you fact said that this is a movie about self-destruction, okay? Which I agree is a theme here. But what the heck does that have anything to do with these aliens in the Shimmer that are cloning people or that are copying people. Like, oh, that's not at all related to the self-destruction.
I think it's everything
part.
To do with, because that alien is the opposite. It's not trying to destruct anything. That alien is trying to learn from what's around it and trying to create. And I think it's trying to, like, take what it has and mix it with what's around and create new things. And that's what, it's kind of what Natalie that's Portman what, says. I think it's even in the trailer, maybe, but at the end when she's talking to Wong from Doctor Strange. And she says, like, it's not trying to destroy. Like, and that's the point is, humans, we're self-destructive. This alien who's here, it's not. And so maybe it's not bad that in the end, like, if we could jump to the end for a second, I interpret the end as it being Natalie Portman has, like, whatever the Shimmer is in the movie, like, whatever this DNA-altering thing. And, like, then her partner is the replicant. Like, that's not actually her husband originally. Mm-hmm. So she can kind of have a new start with him because he doesn't know everything. And that when they, like, if they could create a child, I think that child would have the DNA of that alien.
But she's a copy, too.
I don't think she's a copy.
Oh, you don't?
No.
What was the eye shimmer thing?
That's the DNA that she took on. Like, because remember, Tessa Thompson turned into a tree. Like, I don't, like, we can disagree. Like, I just think that they... When you're inside of it, you saw her blood. She took the blood sample. I think that
the DNA was already mutating.
The DNA was mutating.
So right, but I think, I actually think mutations. She was already a copy at that point. I think
that's
where we differ.
I think that's just where, I don't think she was. I think that that's just when you're inside that shimmer, you can mutate. And so she has that mutation. Oscar Isaac has that mutation. If they have a kid, it would therefore have that mutation. Like, that's so kind of how
I was
going to
ask you this
on.
Question. I guess that kind of answers it. Is if that was regular Natalie Portman at the end, wouldn't she just be happier with the new and improved Oscar?
I think she is happy.
Okay. Because he doesn't know about the infidelity, by the way.
I thought that embrace was a huge moment for her. Like, she's thrilled that she gets to have the second chance with the man she loved. Like, even if it's not him.
She's like, are you Kane? And he's like, I don't think so. Not really.
I am now.
Yeah. I'll be whatever you want me to be.
So you guys talked about the self-destruction thing, and I think it is that, but more to the point that the aliens were bringing about singularity, which is basically the destruction of self or individuality, is now we're like shedding that and we're mutating into the singular force, basically, which is taking on everything, and that's kind of what I thought it was symbolizing, which is something that people like Ray Kurzweil have talked about and futurists talk about how we're going into the singular form, basically, which is like all theoretical, whatever. But I think that's kind of like what the aliens represented. So
do you, Aaron, think that Natalie Portman was a copy by the end of the film?
No, I think, it's hard to say, really, because I think, I don't know, one of you guys brought up that they probably were already copies once they woke up
in the very first time.
Yeah. Which I didn't even consider that, but I think that's probably a good point, which is why they didn't remember anything from before that, which is that's pretty interesting. And we know that that was a trait that Oscar Isaac's character had.
They did remember their lives before they entered the Shimmer, which Oscar Isaac didn't really.
Like, this is true.
His replicant had no clue of anything.
So if we could just talk about like the technical aspect of about it real fast. I mean, just one thing I wanted to bring up real quick was... I don't know if you guys noticed this, but they had so many shots that were through either some sort of filter, natural filter. So it was like the plastic, like cellophane that kept them in the decontaminated area or whatever it was. There was a million shots between that. There were shots through glasses of water. There was all these, like, that was the shimmer, basically. So that's, like, one of these tricks that that they were doing. Technically, they were shooting the camera through all these natural filters. I thought that was a pretty interesting choice Garland and his DP made. So look out for that if you guys go see it.
There's so many little things. I'm definitely going to look for that next time. But it's gorgeous. From, like, a director of photography perspective, it's just a beautiful-looking movie. The coloring... Like, everything inside of the world, like, every, like, little shimmer you see, it's beautiful. And then to, like, look at the CGI stuff, the animals that are just slightly tweaked, and the plants, everything is just, it's beautiful stuff. Like, they did a really cool job. Also, I just wanted to mention something from the book. So, when they are in the book, they arrive in base camp, and they kind of feel a little disoriented. And you find out that the psychologist, who's the leader of the group in the book and in the movie, she is using hypnosis to put them into like this state where she can augment their thinking, what they're going to do on the mission. It pretty much just allows her to do whatever she wants with them, which has some kind of disastrous results in the book. And in fact, is a big part of what happened. Natalie Portman's character in the book becomes immune to that through some like interacting with the plants. And so like that is kind of an interesting way to look at it too. Like, were they just put into a psychosis during that period because of something the psychologist didn't want them to know about, or like had something happen so she's like put them into psychosis to make them forget, like, or not a psychosis, a hypnosis. But yeah, I mean, I hope you guys read the book, or at least like, get the audiobook, because it's a really quick read. It's a short book. And it's a very different story, but it's in the same world, and it will make you think just as much, and it's fantastic.
Well, all three of our praise has been pretty strong for it. I do think that you two liked it a little bit more than I did in terms of your praise. I loved the movie, and I was like wholly in on it from the beginning. Like from pretty early on, I was like, I'm very interested in where this movie's going. And it kept me interested all the way through, which I think is like a lot for a movie to do. You know, and this one's just shy of 2 hours long. And of course, I consistently think movies are too long. But I did want to end on a little bit of criticism for the film that maybe you guys can respond to. Not from me, although I did express I had some criticism about a subplot that was totally unnecessary, the affair subplot, which Skylar says is not even in the book. But a friend of mine who's been on the pod before, Jaron McDonald, he actually texted me and asked me if I'd seen it, and he had mixed feelings on it. And he texted me some of those thoughts. I'm going to read them to you and have you guys respond. He said, for him, the ending was also somewhat empty. He said, like, it was being showy in how intellectual it was without actually putting all the pieces together or having, like, a bold idea. He says, I still need to sit on it, though. He also disagreed with the choices made regarding the look of the film on a technical level. He didn't think it was visually pleasing at all. He says, those are just a few thoughts. He says, I can't say I didn't enjoy the experience, though. I certainly stayed interested throughout. Now, I will say this. I completely disagree with Jerem on the visually pleasing technical standpoint. I'm on the opposite end of that. I thought this was like a gorgeous film. But I think there is something to say about how showy you can be on the intellectual side. And I don't need a film to necessarily, I don't need it to be buttoned up and answer all the questions. But did it pose so many questions of which it really could never answer?
I don't think so. Like, I don't think that's the thing. This movie didn't take the easy way out in the end and not give you the answer to what this was. It could have easily like, gotten to the lighthouse and like she goes down into the cave and like there's nothing, or there was something there, but like it's unclear.
Well, what was Jennifer Jason Leigh's character doing? Like,
well, she was transitioning. She was giving up. She was giving herself to the entity. Mm. But see, and I think that the movie could have easily not shown us this alien, not had that whole scene with where the music gets crazy, and like it could have easily not gone there and then made it way more open-ended and been like, you decide. But it didn't. Like, it took a hard answer. It took what I think is a difficult answer and said this was an alien. Like, that's what happened. Because, like, in the end, Wong is sitting there in his big suit like, oh, so it's an alien. Like, it's a clean-cut thing, which it's still not clean-cut. Like, there are a lot of questions that aren't answered. But I think that it answers enough of the questions to make the questions that aren't answered something worth talking about. And like that's why this is one of those movies you can talk about and you can see over and over again. Because we could be debating it or talking about what we think happens for years, and I think it'll still be interesting. And like the book answers and asks different questions too. And I'm not saying Alex Garland knows how Tessa Thompson turned into a plant versus like how other things happened. But I think that there's definitely solutions in the film that like you don't see on the first pass. And I don't think it was trying to be this, like, I mean, it's definitely not like a lowbrow movie, but it didn't feel pompous in what it's doing. And also your friend saying that it's not a visually pleasing movie, yeah, that's insane. That's like,
yeah,
it's one of the best looking movies I've ever seen.
I know.
Seems like he had an axe to grind.
He did say he had mixed feelings on Ex Machina, but Jerem is a measured individual. He's not somebody who's generally full
mixed
of hot takes.
Feelings on Ex Machina?
He did hate Rogue One, though, which is like a super weird hot take. But yeah.
No, that's the
actually, now that I think about it, maybe he does have hot takes.
So my thoughts on the ending was, like, just my initial thoughts. Yeah. I compared it a lot. I found it gave me a similar feeling as a viewer to the ending of 2001 Space Odyssey, where there's a lot of ambiguity there. And, you know, maybe there are no answers because they just really don't know. And that's the feeling I had when I watched 2001. It's just like it kind of turns into this weird just experience, basically. And there's no clean cut answers. So that's just the feelings that I had watching them. It's kind of like the same thing. I don't really need it to have a tight little bow on the end of it.
Can I throw one other crazy theory out there? Maybe not so crazy.
Let's hear it.
The videotape at the end of Oscar Isaac holding the grenade. I don't think that's the original Kane. I think that's already a copy of a copy.
Ooh, I like that. That's
because he talks about, I used to think I was a man and now I'm not so sure anymore. I think it's been muddled at that point. I think it's a copy of a copy, and then that's the next copy.
But he was sending him after Natalie Portman. Like, he had to have known at that point about his life before.
Sure. I don't know. Which the women knew at the beginning as well, and I believe they were copies. I think that the copies can still retain some of those memories.
We could get Alex Garland on the podcast, but he's probably going to be pretty grumpy, so.
I was going
to
say,
yeah. Yeah, that's true. He doesn't like to answer any questions.
No, he does not. No,
to be fair to him, so, that lady in that interview you sent, she was a terrible host.
It wasn't great.
One of the worst interviews.
And the fact that he was immediately asked to move by the cameraman.
Oh, he did not like that at all.
No, he did not. That went poorly.
So just bringing up the Oscar Isaac character at the end there, did he send the replicant, or I'm calling it replicant, did he send his replica to Natalie Portman so that she could die in there with him? Like, is that his revenge, basically, because she cheated on him?
I don't think he sent her to die. I think he sent her to come and become part of the same thing so that they could
the singularity.
Mate. Yeah. Like, okay. I mean, I think it's all part of it. I think in that moment, he had definitely gotten past that. Like, I think when he was in the Shimmer, he regretted going in to begin with. Like, he wished he could go back and
be
with her. After he cut that dude's stomach open, I would wish I could go back as well.
Yeah.
Dude, that scene
Shimmer
is
world's
nuts.
Incredible, by the way. The whole Shimmer world.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah, I love the way they
I can't
they
wait for Disney
world.
To open Shimmer world right after they finish
it's not all that different
Avatar,
from Avatar
world.
Once they realize no one's interested in that, they can just turn that into the Shimmer.
How much money are they spending on Avatar world?
Oh, 100 million easy. Probably.
100 million? That seems really low.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Can I ask a question? Why wasn't there a tie-in between Jimmer and Shimmer worlds?
Ooh.
We can't change his name to Shimmer for debt for like a month?
Oh
my
promotion
God. For this movie.
They're waiting to see how big it does in China first.
Okay. Shimmer.
This movie will make $0 in China. They could release it in every theater nationwide, and it would make
$0. I don't
think
they're going to release it in China.
Dude, did I see a poster for a movie called Skyscraper with Dwayne Johnson in it?
Yeah,
probably.
That's coming out this summer. What's going on?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
He's got two movies about skyscrapers this summer coming out.
Yeah,
he's the king. He can do whatever he wants.
He really can. He's our future president, so whatever. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. So our recommendation is go see Annihilation. It's projected to make it $11 million this opening weekend, which is pretty low for a $40 million budget. This movie deserves your money.
I'm going to go see it again hopefully next week.
Don't use MoviePass. Wait, no, MoviePass doesn't matter. Yeah, use MoviePass. In fact, if you have MoviePass, find one of those theaters that will let you buy e-tickets, like find a Studio Movie Grill, buy an e-ticket every day for this movie. Even if you're not going to a movie, just buy an e-ticket for this movie, and then don't go, and the movie's still going to go to Alex Garland.
I'm going to buy an e-movie ticket right now.
Go buy an e-movie ticket. Good luck finding a screening this late for a movie that takes, or a theater that takes
I think there's one that starts in 10 minutes at the Studio Movie Grill in Rockland, California, which
perfect. Nice. So, go see Annihilation and delete your Netflix because they release Mute. So,
but don't delete your Bowie albums. Those are still good. No. Well, one's before 1985. Okay. Any other thoughts, guys?
Nope. I think we covered it all. Thanks on my end.
Thanks for listening. Go see Annihilation. Don't watch Ryu. And always remember to heckle Carmelo Anthony. And as we say,
hold on to your butts. Your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.